Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's still wearing the same pajamas as he was wearing last week. He's disgusting. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Welcome to the show. That's not... Is that... My buttons might have stopped working. That's a shame. Yeah, never mind. It doesn't matter for you, most of you, what listen to the podcast. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lockdown Suitcase of Tipples podcast. Yes, it's a topical reference for the 17th of January when we're recording this. But will it still be topical on the 2nd of February when it goes out? I don't know. I was talking to all of Boris Johnson's children the other day. It's the biggest audience I've ever had. That is both a diss on me and on him. And they all call it Rahalastapas. So it's poor old Boris is having trouble. Neat old Boris Johnson having trouble just when they got the flat looking nice. Oh, I had a picture there. Look at that. Not working. Rubbish. What a load of rubbish. Got another picture I wanted to show him. Just when they got the flat looking nice. That's what I'm saying. Look. We're recording this in January. It's going out in February. I'm going to bet you that Boris Johnson is still the Prime Minister, regardless. I'm going to give him 1 million more chances, and then that's it. It's over. I'm sorry if that's harsh. He's only got 1 million more chances for me, and that's... I feel particularly bad about the Number 10 parties, because I buried my parents on the day of the Number 10 parties. They weren't dead, and they managed to dig their way out and contact the... authorities. All I'm saying, if the PM can break the law, why can't I? That's my point. Now, last week I was talking about my daughter. Be good to have the pictures now, but I guess it's not going to happen. Who you may remember, she'd drawn a picture of a man called Jeff, and she'd married him, and they're now married. Then the next day, she told me that her and Fred had had a baby. I said, "Who's Fred?" Because I thought you were married to Jeff. And she said, "Oh, yeah, Jeff. Sometimes I forget his name." It was me. I was worried that Jeff was the heartbreaker. It was Phoebe who's going to turn out to be. She can't even remember the father of the person she's married. Anyway, she told me they'd had a baby who was called Lil. The pictures are up. There we go. Look, you can see him if you're watching. That's Jeff next to Lil. He's definitely the dad from the pink faces. She's inherited half of his smirk. Half of his mouth, and then got another smirk on the other side. It's all happening so fast. I don't know if I'm ready to be a grandfather. I'd plan to bump Jeff off by ripping him to shreds, but I can't do that to a baby. Can I, little Lil? Look at her. She's my granddaughter. She's got the same eyes as me. Look at her. She's beautiful. Enjoy your life, everyone. It whizzes by so fast. It only seems like 2 days ago. My daughter was an unmarried six-year-old, and now look at her with a whole family stuck on a wall. Ah, daddy's idiots, aren't they, kids? Right, look, let's crack on. Hopefully my button will work for this. Ah, delicious. My guest this week is probably best known for her portrayal of Miss Grey in S-Band. Will you please welcome the incredible Gráinne Maguire, ladies and gentlemen. There she is.
Hello.
Hooray. Hello, Gráinne. How are you doing?
I feel just, I'm optimistic. All my tech is working.
Good. Well, it was. We had some dodgy moments before we started, so let's not jinx it. But great to see you. You're in an Airbnb. Whereabouts is the Airbnb?
So me and the comedian Holly Byrne are doing a writer's retreat.
Oh, nice.
In St. Leonard's. So Holly will be wandering around daubing herself in body paint and I'll be writing jokes about Boris Johnson. So.
Okay, that's good. Where is St. Leonard's? I forgot. I can't work out where St. Leonard's is. What
it's like part? It's the hipster part of Hastings.
Okay, all right. That's nice down there. I mean, it's a
very
bit,
nice.
It's nice. There's a lot of horrible people there, but it's a nice area.
Wanted to try heroin, so I'm really excited.
If you've done comedy gigs in Hastings, have you performed in Hastings?
I mean, if I have, I've probably blacked it out. I think I have.
Yeah, it's better to blank it out. It's not the easiest place to play, especially with, I imagine, your more left-leaning comedy. I'm not being prejudiced against the people of Hastings. That's their job. To be prejudiced. So lovely to see you, Gráinne. I can't believe you've not been on the podcast before. Fantastic stand-up comedian, podcaster, political commentator. And the reason that I thought to have you on was because you've got a new podcast out, which my wife was listening to in the kitchen. So I could play along with it because I didn't know what the title, I hadn't seen the blurb. And it's called The Way They Were. We'll get straight into this. Now, I'm not even... You host it with a lady called Chantal, whose surname sounds like she could be a character in Toast. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce her surname. Can you pronounce her surname?
I'm going to go... It's Fiduchin Payne. Okay. It's just nice to be on a podcast with somebody whose name is more difficult to pronounce than my own.
I wondered if that's why you got together. But it's The Way They Were, and it's it's a neat idea. And what I like about it is that I do think of you as, and perhaps not entirely, and it's not entirely fairly because you do lots of other stuff as well. But you're sort of known as being quite a political comedian, or doing a lot of joke comedy about politics. And this is just sort of gossipy, fun exploration. I'm sorry, Gráinne, but this is not that. This is a look at past relationships. And using that as an opportunity to be nostalgic and gossipy and fun about celebrities, right?
It's because it's so funny. Like, I know nobody pays as much attention to, you know, other people's careers as we do to ours. But, like, I have not done any political jokes on stage since Ed Miliband was leader of the Labour Party. Like, I hate it. I hate it so much. But it's so funny that, like... I'm like when people sort of call me a political comedian, I always feel so cringy and embarrassed because, you know, what sort of says more about us as a nation, how we feel about Boris and whoever, and how we all feel about Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt. You know, they are like the runes. They are the tarot cards in which, you know, we as a society explore what it means to be human. So I find it fascinating.
Yeah, well, but I think it's nice because it's a nostalgia podcast as well. But then I think it says quite a lot about relationships and love because it's all about people who were in big famous relationships but are now not together anymore, right? So that's the. You're looking at the nature of love, and yeah, sometimes you're surprised that. You haven't thought about whether the couple are still together or, you know, you'd forgotten they'd broken up or you'd forgotten they were together at all, which is sort of more interesting, perhaps the ones that you kind of think, oh, were those two ever together? How did that work? So it's a very rich area for for chat, I think.
And it's like what age you were when they were together, how did it influence how you thought relationships would work out, you know, what you projected onto them. Like, I am obsessed with Liz Hurley and Hugh Grant. Like, I just, they were such a good couple and they were just so gorgeous together. Like, for me, they are early 90s. Like, they are just so glamorous. And I still think they should get back together. They were so iconic together. I still, in my heart of hearts, have not accepted that either they've moved on, I haven't moved on. So,
yeah, do you think they were ever really together, though? Do you think it was real?
I think they were like two very ambitious people who suddenly found themselves in a situation where being together worked really well for them. Maybe that is a form of love, you know.
I did a gig I've talked about a lot, where in a jeweler's shop in about 2002, it would have been, because I was doing Talking Cock, and all the kind of most famous people. It was all the guests. It was all the main customers of this posh jeweler's, and Hugh Grant and Elizabeth Hurley, I think, were both in. I think Elizabeth Hurley was there. Were both in the audience of that, but not together. Hugh Grant was the only person who really laughed at any of my jokes, and Liz Hurley. I remember Posh Spice was very confused by everything I said, and Elton John did not like me.
Elton, you got dissed by Elton John.
Yeah. Well, then John Robbins, who was engaged to the daughter of the jeweler, I believe he is no longer engaged. You could have them as one of your selected couples. Yeah,
perfect couple.
He told me that after I'd mentioned it on the last podcast I did with him, he said that they said I'd done some homophobic material, which maybe I did my hand signs thing, but I hadn't, because I hadn't written that at that point. And then I thought, no, I haven't. I did the first 5 minutes of Talking Cock. That's all I did, which is, you know, about penises, but it's not. I was really like flummoxed by it, and I couldn't think at the time whether I had or not. And that, now I want to say, John Robbins, I didn't do any harm. Or that I did a joke where I said, I was talking about erections, and I said to Elton, you're still standing there, aren't you, Elton? That's Viagra for you. That was all I did. And he did not like that. He did not like me doing a you're still standing joke. And that's why it went badly. So it's been. But now you kind of think, what did I say something? Did I suddenly turn homophobic in front of Elton John?
Maybe it's just like, imagine you're Elton John, how many you're still standing.
Yeah.
Things he probably hears on a daily basis. Maybe he just had too many you're still standing.
I don't think anyone else would do it to his face. I think I was the first who did that joke to his face. Anyway, we couldn't do his relationship as well. Well, you could do him and his wife, I suppose. You could Elton John and, what was she called? Yeah. Renata or something? I
can't remember. Renata, yeah. He talked about her in his autobiography and then she sued him.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So, you know, it's a rich source. I was listening to the Ellen DeGeneres and Anne Hesh one today. I didn't know that Anne Hesh had gone crazy and gone into someone's house and said she was a goddess of the earth or something and lost her mind.
That's taking it badly. I mean, that is a bad breakup.
So that's,
if you involve aliens, that's it. The other person has won.
But that was, you know, but that relationship is, so, you know, and the minute you got this, because it's so much fun to speculate, isn't it? It's like speculating from, but with both, and what we know about both those people now and what we know about Ellen from her more recent stories, it must have been a pretty traumatic and difficult relationship of two quite big egos, I would have thought.
And it's because it was like the first time Anne Hesh had been like out as a gay person.
Yeah.
You have all of that and then suddenly crazy famous and then like hanging out with like Quentin Tarantino and the Clintons. That's a lot of pressure in, yeah, you know, the first few months of a relationship.
And was it her first gay, was it her only gay relationship? I mean, it's,
I think so, yeah.
Because you do allude to this briefly in the podcast, but Bowfinger, there's the Steve Martin's writes a character. Is it in Bowfinger that there's a character who just keeps on marrying or getting relationships with the person who can help their career the most? And that was Steve Martin's take on you would point out that he was like 20 years older than her as well, and there's there's stuff going on.
I will tell you, the person, our amazing podcast producer, loses about, you know, half her weight in stress editing that.
No, really?
I mean, the libels. Yeah.
We're not worried about libels here. You can say anything, say anything like, until someone sues us, and then we... Well, it's called the way they were, and a strong recommend. Very strong start. Oh. Very strong start. I should stop recommending podcasts on this. I do it too much because
I felt so embarrassed. Like, genuinely, I felt such shame even telling people I was starting a podcast. It genuinely, I was like, has it come to this? You know, 2 years into lockdown, you launch a podcast. Oh, God.
Well, it's a difficult time to launch, but there are too many podcasts now. And I have to think about my listenership, and I will not encourage anyone. Do not listen to Ronja's podcast. If you listen to it, you have to carry on listening to this one. That's all I'm going to say. But I'd prefer it if you just listened to two of mine rather than one of mine and one of hers. That's my thing. Fair. But I did enjoy it. I don't listen to my own one, so I'm allowed to listen to yours. So that's good. So I will carry on listening. excuse me, I'm slightly losing my voice. It's due. I've got COVID and I'm still carrying on. I'm an amazing... nothing can stop me podcasting. That's all I'm going to say to you. I was reading your website today, and which is good as well.
Thank you.
But you have a new. So you send out a newsletter every month or so, or is it just when you feel like it?
I was trying to have the discipline of every fortnight,
right?
But I haven't technically got. It will be when I start back every fortnight.
Okay. I think it's a. It's well, they're sort of basically articles about mainly failures in your life. You put yourself down, many things that have gone horribly wrong for you. They are very funny, but very honest and very open. For a new, my newsletter is, hey, I'm doing a gig here, and you can listen to the podcast here, and please buy my book. And your newsletter is some incredible stories. I was talking to Laura Jean Marsh before we did the podcast about the one. The fact that you poo with very little warning, which is a fact, something I didn't know about you. So you don't get you don't get much between I need a poo and the poo appearing. This is quite a personal thing to get into.
You know, I'm very much like the dog from Woof, but instead of turning into a dog, I poop my pants.
Okay.
So I don't think if they made a kids' TV show about it, it probably wouldn't last as long as Woof. But if anything, I think it would do more, you know, good in the community. It's so bad. Like, if I've had more than two or three coffees, there could be a platform change and I would get very little notice.
Well, you tell us. I mean, I don't want to blow the story because I would like people to go and read that one for themselves. But you do very, very openly talk about shitting yourself and having to hide it from your boyfriend, which is very funny. There's a great one about going for to be a motivational speaker at a sort of posh girls' school, and it all going quite badly wrong for you.
Well, because I should have prepped, but then I just thought, do you know what? I'm just going to connect with them because I know what it's like, you know, to be a teenage girl, to be like, feel like, what would I like to hear? And I was like, you know, like failure is just part of everything and things are going to be shit and that's fine. And it was only when I got to the school, oh my God, it was like the fanciest, like, I went like gym come sports center. It was, and then I just walked into this hall and I suddenly realized none of these girls will ever know failure. They will never know failure. And just that suggestion that something might not work out for them. When I said it, they looked so offended and like, they looked like offended and sorry for me at the same time. Like, what is this you speak of? And I was so convinced I was going to be like Michelle Pfeiffer, Dangerous Minds, connecting with the kids. And it turned out the only people I was connecting it with was the teachers at the back who have to work with these rich, entitled little brats. They were like, yeah, yeah, you're right. Life doesn't work out the way you planned. Look at me teaching. It's bloody school. But the actual students, they just were, oh my God, I'm talking about pooping my pants. Pooping my pants would have been more dignified than what happened. And it was, oh my God. Yeah, it was a long train back to central London after that one.
Do you feel, because, you know, it is more fun to write and read about the gigs that went badly and the times in your life that went badly. And I very much, it's lovely to see someone else admitting to those things, I think, because we've all been through something humiliating, or we've all pooed our pants at some point. It's nice to see someone talk about it. But do you ever, I mean, there may be, I haven't read all of them, there may be some about your triumphs in there, but it seemed to be mainly about your disasters, that your newsletter you send out is, here's my terrible life, and the foolish things have happened to me as a result of my...
But I think they're the only interesting stuff. Like, that's the only interesting thing you have of worth to share with people, is the humiliations and failures. They're the funniest. There's nothing funny about, oh, I went on this holiday and it turned out it was really nice. It's so boring. I just think, especially from a comedy point of view, that's where the good, juicy stuff is. And I just think from, like, I think that this is going to sound very pretentious, but, you know, I think the kindest thing you can be to people is honest and about, like, your failures. But what I find funny is, I'm obviously think, well, if I've articulated this in a newsletter, then it would suggest that I'm okay about this. But, you know, like, friends or aunties will be like, oh my God, are you okay? I read your newsletter. I'd be like, okay, so if it's at the stage where I'm, you know, sending it out to anonymous email addresses, it's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine.
It is good, but let people know you're very successful and as well. These are just the moments where things have gone wrong. And, you know, I completely agree. I think you're absolutely right. And there's the story about you doing a gig, because your family, you're from Ireland and your family are quite, it's quite a Republican. I mean, when I say it's quite a Republican family, I read about your grandfather being shot at by the British forces and only escaping because they thought they're ricocheting bullets were him for shooting back at them. So
yeah,
they were very heavily into the Republican
the cause.
Movement.
It answered the nation's call.
Yeah.
I didn't even say it in the news session. This is my granddad, because he fought in the Civil War. He broke out for prison. Like, he blew himself out for prison. Isn't that mad?
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting. And, you know, because I'm partly Irish, like everyone is, I'm you know, I'm more on your side than my side, so it's okay. I've come from stocky. If you look at me, I come from the Hannan family of, and I'm a stocky little Irishman. Look at me. Why couldn't I have got some of the genes from the other British Isles?
I could see you with a rifle. Telling Padraig to remember me.
I mean, you're a sort of, you know, you're a Labour supporter, so it's, you know, is that a cause of stress within the family, that your politics don't quite align with the historical Maguires?
Well, because what it was, so growing up in the 90s, being like, and it was so weird because it's like a completely different country, I don't know why I was so obsessed, but like being like a new Labour fan in Ireland in the 90s was like, in my house, as rebellious as you could get. Like, that was, oh my God. And me, because my parents, because, you know, it's so weird that sometimes I just think it's so mad that, like, my granddad was part of this, like, it feels like ancient history, but it's like, just like, I'm just one generation, you know, away from it. So my parents were really... Oh, so I don't know how much I want to go into detail, but there's periods of the 1970s, you know, and a few relations I have, been a bit vague. If I went on Who Do You Think You Are, they'd have to skip that bit. But they were very, like, pro. Like, my mum especially would be like, oh, my God, Gerry Adams is a statesman. Gerry Adams, you know, is like will be remembered in the history books as a, you know, person of peace. And I used to get so annoyed. I'd be like, oh, my God, Gerry Adams is a terrorist. Tony Blair is a politician. So it's bittersweet. As the years go by, it becomes even more bittersweet.
But you performed you've done a gig for Gerry. Well, that Gerry Adams was in the audience for, very like me and Elton John and Hugh Grant and Liz Hurley.
It was. So what had happened was, so my sister is a member of the local Sinn Féin party. And like, honestly, now they're more like left-wing Labour, you know. They're a different, it's very sort of different there now. They're not as sexy as they were in the 90s. You can hear their voices on the news and everything.
Yeah.
It was like a fundraising gig for Sinn Féin. My sister sort of like talked me into performing, and I didn't really want to, but you know, who could turn down a hometown, you know, return gig? I genuinely was like, this was the first time I'd ever done stand up in my town. I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be my big moment. You know, I've moved away to London, but now I'm back, I'm gonna show them. And I said, oh, am I gonna be like the headline act? And then my sister was like, oh no, don't be stupid, Father Ray, the singing priest, he's the headline act, but you'll be on like quite towards the end. So I thought, right, that's fine. So I go out. So like, it's a Republican night. So it wasn't just like all stand up. There was like poems. It was very earnest, very, very serious. There was a whole like mini Michael Collins play in the first section. So I bound on, but because I'd only been going about like 5-7 years at this stage. So you don't have a stand-up set that is very fluid to the situation. So I just did my regular club 20, basically. And I had this joke in it where I said, you couldn't set the sound of music in Ireland, mainly because you wouldn't be able to have realistically likeable nuns. And then I could sense like things sort of shifting in the back. And then I said, and the ending would be different. It would just be all the kids being sold to paedophiles in America. And then I could see movement. And then this guy just stood up, walked out. And then I found out afterwards that was the local priest. And then so Father Ray, the singing priest, was banned from performing at the gig because of what I had said. He wasn't allowed to go on stage.
Wow.
So the night sort of had to end really sort of quickly. And Gerry Adams was in the front row the whole time. So I was in a room with Gerry Adams and he was fine, but I was the one causing all the problems.
Yeah.
And he was very charming. He looked a bit like a Bee Gee. He had these amazing big teeth and fantastic hair. And yeah, I'd love to chat with him at the end.
Did he speak in his real voice, or does he still have someone going around with him doing his voice for him?
I don't know. It was very sexy, confident.
You wouldn't remember those. You're too young to remember those days, though, right? Where I suppose it was the BBC as well, though. Do you remember the days when all the Sinn Féin people were voiced by actors?
I remember the hinterland, and it just like a vague sort of memories of it, and I just think. Think of all those actors, that was their main gig. Like, nobody thinks about them. That would have been a good source. If ever, like, a bomb went off, they'd be like, oh, great, I'm going to get the phone call tomorrow. This is brilliant.
But I don't understand. I mean, if he had a very sexy voice that could hypnotise people, then maybe that's it. Do you think that was it? Because I don't understand. Surely it's what he says, not the way he says, you know. If they were going to censor people, you'd think they would stop people hearing the words. It's sort of odd. It was an odd decision at the time.
Maybe he was like the original ASMR, where his voice was just so baritone and sexy that people were like, ooh,
yeah,
I feel all weird. They wouldn't be able to contain themselves. They'd be like, give them the six counties back.
We should give Ireland back to the Irish. It's it's obvious.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, talking of Ireland, you come from Navan. Is that, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Good.
Perfect.
Thank you. And that is it's spawned an awful lot of stand-up comedians in the, is it Dylan Moran, Tommy Tin and Arthur Matthews who wrote Father Ted? You?
And
anyone else?
Me and Pierce Brosnan.
Okay. I mean, he's quite funny. He has his moments.
Mamma Mia. He was fantastic.
Was that deliberate though in Mamma Mia? Was he being deliberately funny in that?
My auntie served him in a hotel about 10 years ago and it was just like, you know, bog standard hotel. And she went up to him and she went, "More carrots, Mr. Bond." And he was very nice to her. So love him so much.
That's very nice. What is it about Navan that has bred this gen, well, especially more recently, that's you know, those three alone plus you almost everyone from Irish comedy there.
I think it's Navan has the biggest lead and zinc mine in Europe.
Right.
So I genuinely think we're being slowly poisoned,
and that's making your brains work. And okay.
And we've got Sellafield quite near.
Okay.
So I think in 100 years' time, people go, how did they not know something was going wrong?
So rather than you're being fantastic comedians, you've just been poisoned and are mentally ill. And the things you say just happen to... Just statistically, one in 100 people in that town that will just come out accidentally as jokes. For most people, it's just blathering. It's an interesting thing where there's I mean, I know Ireland has a kind of reputation for wittiness and clever humour, but it sort of is surprising. Is how big a town is Navan?
It's such a shithole. It is such a shithole. It's basically a town formed around a shopping centre. Like, I cannot emphasise. It's so, even like Navan people think it's a shithole. It's so boring. It's so boring. There was like two cinemas when I was there and one was closed down because there was rats in it. And we had a swimming pool for a while, but then there's a hole in the roof. So that got closed down. So I genuinely think everybody's just slowly losing their mind.
Okay. Well, that's it. We'll see. like many comedians, I'd see you tried clowning, but you didn't get on with clowning. Did you go to France and do the course?
No. So I went with Katie, actually. And friend of the show, Katie. It was just a weekend. And this is what annoyed me. So it was like everybody, comedians, midlife crisis, you do clowning. So I thought, oh, this will be brilliant and it'll be so inspiring and it'll bring it, you know, a lyricism to my stand-up. It'd be fantastic. So it's so expensive, like unbelievably expensive.
I may have lost you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sorry. You froze. My internet connection is unstable.
Aren't we all?
Sorry, carry on.
So ruinously expensive. We did, it was for 3 days. So the first day, the teacher, the guy running the course, was like, whenever I got up to do anything, he would say, no, you wanted too much. It's horrible. You wanted too much. Looking at you, I want to kill myself. And I was thought, oh, well, you know, I know what this is. He's hazing me. He sees potential. Okay, I'll sit down. Fine, fine. Second day, I get up to do an exercise. Ugh, I want to go to IKEA and build myself a gas chamber to kill myself so I don't have to see this. And I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'm entering into the process. Finally, third day, I genuinely was like, just let me do one exercise. This has cost me £600. It was such bullshit. It was such bullshit.
It works for some comedians, doesn't it? It's a few come back and changes their lives.
Scientology. Just do Scientology instead. You get to meet Will Smith.
Good. I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. Just to see. Oh, well, I know the answer. I know that you have an answer for this one because of your vlog, but I'll ask you this one first of all. Have you ever seen a ghost, Gráinne Maguire? Yes,
I have seen a ghost.
Yes, you have.
I've met a ghost.
Okay, tell me about that.
Okay, so I was at university. Okay, I was coming home from the student bar. This is really important. My hangover was just about to start. So put pin on that. Hangover just about to start. I'm going into my house. This is a house that was belonged to an old couple. The woman had died in the house. Her husband was living in an old folks home, but we were renting it to students. So got into the house, hangover just starting, get into bed. I fall asleep. I wake up and it's like my arm, for some reason, has been sort of brought forward. There is an old woman at the bottom of my bed. She puts a white disc into the palm of my hand. I pop it into the glass of water by my bed. It fizzes. I drink it, go back to sleep, wake over, no hangover.
Wow.
So now how do you explain that?
I would say, well, I've had the experience where, and someone reminded me of this, where, because it was in a retro one we put out, that I was asleep. I mean, A, you were asleep, Gráinne, that's how I explain it. And you think you woke up and you didn't wake up. And I've had quite a lot of experiences like that. I saw the ghost of my son when I was, and it was really real, and he's not dead, importantly. And I reached out to grab him because I thought it was weird. It was so real. And then my hand went through him. And I think that was a dream. But there's an archetype of a hag that sits on your chest and kind of tries to choke you when you wake up. So maybe yours is just a nice hag who's cares about you.
But I had a hangover in the morning. Surely that's science. There was no hangover.
Have you never had a night where you've had drunk and not had a hangover? Sometimes you don't get a hangover as bad.
I don't know.
Sort of.
I mean, look.
Is it possible?
All these ifs, ands, or buts.
Is it possible? I'm just being rational. I'm being like Danny Robbins. I've got to show both sides. It is a good story. But, you know, what ghost gives you an Alka-Seltzer? But is it possible the old woman hadn't died and had just pretended she died to get away from her husband and was still living in a spare bedroom, had seen you were not well and then gave you an Alka-Seltzer to get you through the day?
I mean, that is a possibility.
And, you know, do those
you
things...
say it like that.
Do those things ever... I suppose if one is literally from the other side, they brought that back with them from heaven, then it just seems a waste of your ghostly powers to stop a girl... having a hangover once. If it was a magic pill that stopped you ever having a hangover. It's a good story. I'm going to give you that. I'll give you that. It's one of the better ghost stories we've had.
I like to say it at funerals when somebody's just lost a real loved one, just to give them hope.
Yeah.
The soul continues.
A sort of Amazon delivery thing from the ghosts.
Yeah.
Gráinne, have you ever milked an animal or a human?
No,
you said,
I feel because I grew up in the countryside. I feel like I should, but I just was from a very boring part of the countryside.
No. See, again, in your newsletter, again, against yourself, there was a date you had where a first date with someone where the man said that you looked like a nun in civvies.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't work out if that is like a bit. I think there's a sort of racist element to that, I think. Do you think?
Death, 100%. But anytime any English person says anything to me, I first assume they're being, you know, racist against Irish people. Yeah. So,
well, I wouldn't do that because, as I've said, I'm unlike everyone else, I am partly Irish, so I would never do that. It's not a good tact. I mean, that's like, what was his hope in that date? They go, I know, I'll tell her she looks like an off-duty nun. That should... I mean, was that... Do you feel, I wonder if it was... It's not a good chat-up line, but I wonder if it was... He was just voicing his own fact. Maybe he thought, this is good. He was saying, this is good. I've always wanted to fuck a nun. And you look... Yeah. If you could get the costume, you
I
would
really
be great.
Like the Sound of Music, yeah.
But, yeah. It's a good story as well. It's another good story. So I'll ask you, I'm going to go for another emergency question.
The humiliations of life. It's all copy.
It is. Well, it's, you know, but as a comedian, I'm writing this book now about having a testicular cancer and losing a testicle. And I'm, you know, before when I thought that I didn't, I went into initially and they said, no, you're fine. It's not going to be cancer. It's going to be something else. And I was slightly disappointed because I thought, that would have been I could have got a good show out of that. I was happy, but there was a big element of disappointment in me. And, you know, that came back to bite me, literally, not quite on the bum, just near the bum, bit me, and I lost the ball. So, you know, careful what you wish for, Grainne, is what I'm saying.
You shouldn't have put it on your vision board. That's where you made the mistake.
I did. What is the strangest thing you found in your cleavage, belly button, or anal cleft, Grainne Maguire? Have found anything?
I think I've definitely found crisps.
Yeah,
definitely.
In all three areas, or just
in all three areas? It was a good night out. It's good. It's like one of the advantages of being a woman. You know, you have to biologically be better at hiding food from sneaky men. So that's why we've got all these creases and clavicles.
Well, it's, you know, it would be nice to have crisps. I guess I could get my belly button. I could get them in my anal cleft. I don't check my anal cleft as much as I should probably for crisps.
Do you think that's what, is it like self-perpetuating? So the more you put on weight, the more areas in your body there are to store food.
That's true.
And the skinnier you are.
Yeah.
Nothing.
You're right. So then, yeah, and then there's always food, and then it's like your body's way of keeping you. It's better to, you know, it's better to be overweight. That's why your body wants you to be overweight, because it's better in case there's a famine or something, and then you can just sit back. And, you know, and then doubly so if you can harvest food from yourself. You can find it. What we need is sort of some smoked meats, really, I suppose, something like that, something that will you can leave there for several months and then come back to, and it will still be edible. The danger is
under each boob.
A lot, and that would probably, you know, people would just think it was part of your body. Yeah,
they'd be like, you'd smell. They'd be like, I don't even want to know. They'll just leave you to your food.
Yeah. It would be a sad existence. Now, you've been in America recently, and again, another lovely newsletter about your engagement. Congratulations on becoming engaged against your wishes,
morals,
your morals. But you know, you come out of that story badly as well, I think.
Yeah.
And your fiancé seems like a lovely, lovely man.
Oh, my God.
And I'm delighted that you've decided to get engaged and have been married. I saw a photo of you. Now, I couldn't find it again, but I saw a photo, I presume, on social media somewhere. Were you with Seth Meyers, or was it Seth Meyers?
My good friend, Seth Meyers.
What were you friend doing with Seth podcast. Meyers?
Oh my God, it was just incredible. So over lockdown, I became obsessed with American late night shows.
Okay.
You know, your Stephen Colbert. I started having really intense sex dreams about Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, all of them. And then I was going to New York, and I managed to get a ticket to go see a recording, and I managed to get a backstage pass
wow.
to meet Seth Meyers. And when I tell you, I was so nervous that for about 3 days, I genuinely hoped I would get a positive COVID test because I was so terrified about it. I was so nervous. And then Brian Cox was a guest. So he was sort of hovering around backstage and I basically bullied Brian Cox into posing for a picture with my fiance. I Logan Murray'd him. Not Logan, but I keep saying Logan Murray. Logan Royd.
Oh, Logan yeah,
Murray
Logan
is a stand-up comedian. I Logan Royd'd him into posing for a picture. But it was amazing. He was so like charismatic and gorgeous and just as you would want him to be. He was so lovely.
Oh, that's nice.
And did Logan Roy. Seth Meyers wasn't bad either.
Okay. Did you suggest you could write for him? Because you write for a lot of UK shows, a lot of topical shows. You could write
well,
for him.
See, this is why I was so nervous, because in my head I was like, okay, what would like a real go-getter do? Well, a real go-getter would be like, hey Seth, oh, great jokes, but hey, shall I pitch you some more? And then I thought, oh no, that'd be awful, that'd be a nightmare. So I tried to just as much as possible be like, hey, we're just two people in the industry chatting to each other. That was what I was trying to achieve in our 4 minutes talking to each other.
Oh.
But he was very nice. He was so lovely.
That's good.
And if you're listening, I would happily write for your show, Seth. I'm sorry I didn't say that to you.
Send him some jokes in. Send him some jokes in now. Well, I'll mention this. I don't know. This was a little while ago, I think, wasn't it? When you live tweeted your menstrual cycle to the Irish. Now, I want to say Taoiseach. I don't know how to say that word.
There you go. Perfect.
And to Kenny. I just think of Taoiseach and then change the end to Taoiseach. That's how I do it. And I want to say Edna Kenny, but it's Enda Kenny.
Enda.
So, you know, like, good old Ed. I've done pretty well of getting my Irish right. Why was that, just for a bit of fun, Ronya? Or was there a purpose behind that?
Well, it's just like, so at the time, abortion was illegal in Ireland, and it's just like so horrific and just like a nightmare situation. And it's so like, it's really hard when things are that bleak and upsetting to try and find a comedy angle.
Yeah.
Can be very hard because it's like overwhelming. You have to go through this wall of rage. And I just always kind of hoped, because I kind of feel like, I don't know if you feel like this, but you never want to be earnest. And whenever I tweet about anything I feel really passionate about, I always try and think, is there a way I can make this point while being funny? Like, because I'm not, there's nothing worse than, guys, let's just take a moment, blah, blah, blah. I hate it.
Yeah.
So I came up with an idea to try and highlight how awful it is that a government would get involved in something so private as a woman's health, you know, that I thought, well, okay, fine. Well, you've invited yourself there, so I'll just tell you in explicit detail when my next period is.
Yeah.
And it was like a moment in Ireland that I was like part of. You
sure.
know, I think everybody was just collectively fed up.
Yeah.
Of how awful it was, and thankfully they changed it.
Yeah. Do you think it was because of you, just to stop you doing that?
Yeah, I think that's all it takes. Yeah.
If only we'd known all that time. Just be, you know, slightly make someone feel slightly uncomfortable.
Make a man talk about tampons against his will. That's good. All it takes.
But it is interesting. I think you're right, and I've seen you say this as well, that it's sort of, you know, the humour, when you're doing political stuff, which I know you don't do all the time, Grania, that, you know, it's not being partisan, which is obviously quite difficult to some extent. But it's about not preaching. It's about finding the funny and finding the. I saw you on a clip where you were some guy had written a book of Jeremy Corbyn jokes, and you were on the Daily Politics or something like that as a Jeremy Corbyn fan. And I think they thought, oh, we'll get someone on, and then they'll be furious that people are joking about Jeremy Corbyn. And this guy did some, you know, fairly weak jokes about Jeremy Corbyn that weren't really about him. Were just joke. It was fine. But you were very much like, yeah, great. We should do jokes about everything. And it's funny. It's good to be able to laugh. And we sort of seem to have lost that a little bit within politics and within joking about politics, perhaps. Do you think that's down to Twitter?
I think I just think it's when you're earnest, it's absolute kryptonite for comedians. When you want applause instead of laughter, and when you're not willing to be the idiot. Because I just think, even if you're talking about, you know, Boris Johnson or Trump or all these things, you have to ultimately be an idiot in it too. It can't be just like, this is why I'm right and all these other people are idiots. Because I just think it's so boring and tedious. And I think it's that vulnerability that doesn't translate onto Twitter. And then I think it is really tribal, and people aren't willing to, well, not people aren't willing. I mean, I think comedy is as good now as it's ever been. You know, it's the same. But I think bad political comedy is when the comedian isn't willing to be an idiot. Yeah. As well as the people that they're attacking.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something. I mean, it's, you know, as a comedian, you're allowed to make some serious points if you want. But I think, yeah, I think the ultimate thing should be the laugh, and it should be finding the funny way of getting there. Which that's you know, the menstrual cycle thing is perfect for that, because it's finding the angle that will make people laugh as well as think about it. So it's both, you know. Just, yeah, I think that's a very good point. And you've disappeared. Oh my goodness. Oh, you're back, thank goodness.
Oh, back. Just plugging my laptop in. I'm a girl boss.
Oh god, there's so many good stories in your newsletters. It's insane. I'd forgotten about you being an usher at a theatre. And being offensive to Chris Marshall from my family. Oh, that's a good story.
I was so awful. I was so... whenever I see him now on television, it's so... flashbacks. I was so awful. I got bullied him. I was so awful to him. And then he was in the BT ad, so he'd pop up and... oh my God. I've got beef. I've got a celebrity beef, me and Chris Moore. I'd love to meet him and just hash it out, because we could be friends. But I fear he'll never forgive me. And why would he? Why would he trust me after what happened?
But did he? So you were drunk and he put you in a cab after this. So you were rude to him. He put you in a cab and then you didn't have any money. So the cab drove back and asked Chris Marshall for the money for the cab. And did he pay it for the cab?
He paid it.
Wow. Did he ever pay him?
I tried to pay. This is how drunk I was. I tried to pay for that taxi with a Discman. I tried to pay with a Discman. Oh, the mid-noughties were a more innocent time.
They were, well.
He was
not according
he
was to
so
last
lovely. Yeah.
Well, but did you give him the money back later?
No.
I think we should arrange for you to pay Chris Marshall back. I wonder if he remembers. Oh, I bet he does remember. I mean,
I'd say he does. The Almeida Christmas party. He was doing the misanthrope.
Yeah, the misanthrope.
And I said that. You think you're really funny, but you're not as funny as you think you are. Oh my God!
It's true. That is true.
It's true of us all.
Speaking
it's true of
truth.
Us all.
I like Chris Marshall. But he got run over, didn't he? Do you remember when he got run over?
This is me.
Yeah.
This is maybe I am responsible for that, because, you know, I stress when I see him so much. If he's genuinely, Chris, if you're listening, I'm very sorry. You were in the right and I was in the wrong.
Give him his money back. I can't believe, if I'd been Chris Marshall and if I'd been at a party and then someone had been rude to me and then I'd put them in a cab. And then the cab came back and said, presumably wanted double fare because he had to come back. So he would need the money for the fare and the money for taking you back home again. I would say, no, I'm not paying for that. I'm Chris Marshall. She can pay us. I'd just dump her here. She can sleep in the stalls. Absolutely.
You see, that's why he's the nation's sweetheart.
It is.
Because he paid for my taxi.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
He is a good man. Makes up for, you know, the being in love, actually, isn't it? Makes up for that crime against humanity. Well, look, you're a fan of museums. I have a museum-based question for you. If you could have... if all the world's art galleries and museums in the world got together, said, we love Gráinne Maguire, she was rude to Chris Marshall, but we'll forgive her, and as a reward for all the pleasure she's given us with her wonderful career... of mainly political stuff, but occasionally some other stuff. She can have one item from any museum or art gallery, what one item would you like to own from all the world's museums and art galleries that you could keep?
I will tell you what it is.
Yeah.
It's the recreation of a Victorian pub in the Museum of London.
Wow, okay. And you want to...
I just love it because sometimes... Because you can just walk in. And I just think, this is my dream. This is my dream. I would love to be famous / successful enough that I... You don't think get away with like being like all these weird whimsies. I would love to be like so eccentric and successful enough that I would only do my business meetings in the Victorian pub in the Museum of London. Like, that's where you would meet me. And we would have like a normal business meeting, but it would be there.
But would you take, I imagined you were saying, right, I'm taking this and I'm putting this in my flat or wherever I live. This is going to be mine now. And people have to come to us.
No, it would stay where. It would stay there.
People could enjoy it.
It'd be my workspace. It'd be like my personal WeWork, and you know, producers or people would be like, "Oh well, okay, we could get Grania, but the thing is, she only takes meetings in the Museum of London Victorian Pub,
okay,
on the recreation Victorian High Street. That's where you would meet.
I've got some questions about it. Are there actors pretending to be Victorians in it, or is it just this is what a pub looks like? Or is it
so it's
interactive?
It's just what a pub looks like.
Okay.
It's a normal pub. It would carry on like a normal working museum, but I would be there just doing my everyday admin,
okay,
ignoring everybody.
And you're sitting at the bar, or you're sitting at a table at the back you would have, or is it?
The table at the back. There's a nice little table, okay, at the back. I'd be sat there, charge my phone, maybe glaring at people when they walked in.
Okay. You can't sit. Would you be allowed to take your phone in if it's a Victorian pub? Wouldn't you have to blend in with the right time frame?
I think I would be allowed, but nobody else would.
Okay. Or could you just have like on your, could you have like an old one of those phones on the table that would just go, your mobile would push through to? I think we could work it out.
Maybe carrier pigeons.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Well, no one's chosen that before. Out of all the people I've asked that question to, no one's ever done that.
What a power move. What a power move it would be. Be like, she's great. She's read the script. She's got a few ideas. But you do know the only place she takes meetings is Victorian Recreation High Street in the Museum of London.
I think if you get to the point where Steven Spielberg and people are coming down there, then I want to see it. I think that's good. I'm going to ask you a question from my new book, still available, which hangs, Would You Rather? All these books are still available. Let me see. No, I've asked that one last week. I can't find the right one for you. No, I'm not going to ask you that. Okay. Would you rather live in a society ruled by children aged 6 and under, or have to be tied to the wheel at a water mill and be spun round for the next 13 hours? If you choose the water wheel, your head will only be underwater for about 30 seconds of each revolution, but it'll be very sunny and you won't be allowed sun cream or to be released from the water wheel to go to the toilet. And we know what problem that's going to be for you. The children will carry on ruling society for at least 5 years, maybe more if they do a better job than the current lot. So it's either 5 years of our country being governed by 6-year-olds or 13 hours of you being sunburnt and drenched in a toilet-free water wheel.
And so these little, like, child kings,
yeah,
are they sort of picked from all across, you know, different social... How are they chosen?
I think to give it a chance, I think they would be chosen from, you know, each school maybe would put one... 5 or 6-year-old forward. This is the person we think would be best to rule the country. And then it would be a parliament of the 600 best would be chosen and would be able to vote on stuff. But, you know, I've got a 6-year-old and I don't know how much they'd concentrate and stuff. There'd be a lot of laws about poo. That's all I can tell you.
Could be difficult for me.
It could be difficult. Might suit you. Might be you can just poo. Might, if it was my son who's 4, it'd be, I just want to, is it, you're allowed to poo on people's heads. That would be all he would want.
Because I think they would be amazing at, like, the, you know, the big, big stuff. You know,
yeah,
everybody has to be kind and share stuff. But it's like the logistics, like whoever, like whatever 5-year-old was in charge of, like, bin collection. I would worry. I would really worry about that. Or, like, the situation, like negotiating with Syria. Do we, you know, do we talk to that government? Or so I think I would worry about the children involved in that.
Yeah.
So I would go. I'll go for the wheel.
So you'd be prepared to spend 13 hours on a water wheel? I mean, risking possible death to prevent that. That's very, very bold of you.
Think of the Edinburgh show. Think of the Edinburgh show off the back of it.
You probably,
that would be a newsletter. Get a newsletter out of that.
You would. So are you planning to do a new show, a new Edinburgh show maybe? Or is it?
Rich, I genuinely think this year in Edinburgh is going to be the Hunger Games. It's going to be insane. It's going to be all these attention seekers who haven't had, you know, daily reviews of the show for 2 years. I think it's going to be so insane. So I'm very happy to sit this one out.
Yeah, sit this one out.
Do you not think it'll be absolutely,
I don't know. I wonder whether people, you know, there will be people who are very, very hungry to get back to it. But I almost wonder by, I know it did happen a bit last year, but almost by being sort of stopped, that I think a few people will think, why did I, you know, the moat will fall from their eyes. And they'll go, why was I doing that every year when I could, you know, I've done this in lockdown and got more attention. Mm-hmm. I think there are lots of great reasons for doing Edinburgh. And those are the reasons you should always have been doing it. But for a lot of the people going there, they're thinking, I could get discovered, I could get this. And I think those kind of people would go, why don't I just tweet out a few funny videos of myself? Because that's where everyone's coming from now, isn't it? That's where the names that get picked out are the people who come up with a good idea online. So I don't know.
I think it's brilliant. I think Edinburgh being put off for 2 years is the best thing that has ever happened to UK comedy. I just think it's so brilliant. It's, you know, people aren't getting into huge debt. It's all these new voices. I think it's fantastic. I really think it's been so good for everybody.
Well, you know, it's a little fire break, and it'll be, I think the Fringe will return, and I think it, you know, there's only good things about the Fringe, but I think it has become sort of unfeasible and weird, and my feeling is that more people, you might be surprised, and maybe people won't do it. But, you know, I think we're going to do some Rahulastapas up there. I was thinking of doing a stand-up show, but I don't know if I want to go up for a whole month and put myself through that. So,
just enjoy your lovely life.
Yeah, I could try. What's left of it? What little is left of it? So is there anything else coming up? There's the podcast, The Way They Were. Do check that out. Is there anything else we should be looking out for with Gráinne Maguire attached to it? Newsletter.
My newsletter is my little letters in a bottle that I chuck into the sea of the internet every fortnight. I really enjoy doing them. I'm like everybody's little pen pal, and my podcast. That's
they're both absolutely excellent, and I do recommend both. So do check those out. And whenever you're back doing a new stand-up show, go and check out Gráinne Maguire's very, very good stand-up. Not as political as you'd think.
Mainly, I've got amazing stuff on Ed Miliband and his political future.
Mainly political, but not. And she was Miss Grey in S-Band as well. Let's never forget that. So thank you very much, Gráinne, for coming on the show. And we'll see you soon, I hope. And good luck with everything. Gráinne Maguire, ladies and gentlemen. Hooray! Thanks very much. We'll be back next week. We've got a special guest from America next week. It's a secret. Ooh. See you then, bye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Gráinne Maguire. Thank you to Scantregard for playing this music. I am indebted, of course, to Chris Evans, not that one who does so much hard work behind the scenes, including setting up all of the live streaming for these particular shows. I'm also indebted, of course, to Ben Walker, who is now, I forget him. I mean, mainly, though, I think it's me that is the main one in this, and I should be thanked more often, I think, in the credits than I am. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to gofasterstripe.com/badges if you want to help us out with a small monthly donation in return for all these podcasts, which will just help us make more podcasts and more content for you to enjoy. You'll get loads of cool extras as well, and find out about those guests at the Leicester Square Theatre before any of the non-badge scum. But do keep listening to the adverts, everyone. You don't have to become a badger, even just listening to the podcast with the adverts in really helps us make more stuff, and that's all we want to do for you, my family and friends. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.